So I think we are ready to start the next to the last session of the day. We have been the whole day talking about passwordless, sudo, SSH. But now we are going to switch the topic to something completely different. And we have here together with us Carla. She's the main developer for the modern UI in the Free API. And she's going to talk about some internal aspects.
Thank you, Trevino. This is my first time at FOSDEM, so please bear with me. So, as you already know, so I am Carla. I am software engineer in Red Hat. More specifically, I'm on the Free APA team. And I will talk about the how we migrated the web UI from the current version to the modern one. So especially I'm going to focus on the multi-factor authentication. Okay, this is the agenda that we will follow in today. So I will start with some context, speaking about the what is the Free APA, the web UI, and some things that are important to know. I will provide a bit more context on the legacy state, so that means the current web UI. And I want to make a note. So I will make reference to the current web UI as the old web UI, but this is not discontinued yet, okay? But in order to make the difference, I will refer to the current one as the old one. Then I will follow up with the modern approach and what we did to modernize the web UI. And I will end up with the conclusion and what will be working next. Okay, so let's start with the migration context. So as many of you already know, so FreeAPA, it's an integrated identity and authentication solution that combines a lot of administration tools and to manage the security of Linux and Unix network environments. So actually there are currently two ways of using FreeAPA. You can either using the IPA commands directly, or you can use the web interface. This is the modern, the web UI, and this is what we will be talking today. So FreeAPA is quite an old tool. It was born, I think, 15 years old, and its web UI has been around since 2011, so basically they are like two teenagers. And yeah, that's why since 2022, there is an effort to modernize the current web UI into a modern one using some change in the new infrastructure and using modern tools. Because the changes won't be made on the top of the existing web UI. As we need a fundamental shift, we are implementing a new web UI, independent from the original one, because eventually the modern web UI will replace the current one, the old one. I won't dive deep much into the main reasons of why this changed, because this was already covered in one FOSDEM talk that we did in 2004. Actually, it was Trevino presenting it. But in a nutshell, so it contains a lot of legacy code that over time became very difficult to maintain. And this is partly because of the use of deprecated libraries and framework tools. And this leads to poor accessibility, responsiveness issue, and security. And this, with these reasons, it is important to perform a radical change to adapt the web UI. And that includes the way we manage the authentication flows and methods. Okay, so currently there are three ways of authenticating into the modern web UI, not the modern, the regular UI. So you can authenticate either using the username and password. Secondarily, you can enhance it with two-factor authentication. You can authenticate using the Kerberos tickets and via client certificates. And the goals for this new adaptation, and the challenge that we have ahead of us is to preserve the multi-factor authentication functionality, but modernizing the implementation following those better practices that we will be mentioning in this talk. Okay, to understand why we migrated, I would like to provide more context about what we are migrating from, especially in terms of the authentication methods. Okay, our legacy code was built in JavaScript, more specific using Dojo Toolkit and jQuery. And at the time this was built, it was cutting edge. But remember, it's already 15 or 60, I don't remember, 16 years old, so it's quite old. And over the last decade, this architecture revealed some structural weaknesses that made maintaining complex flows increasingly painful. And we identified five friction points that were slowing down us in terms of how to properly adapt this to a modern solution. So we were working with a monolithic architecture where logic was tightly coupled with DOM manipulation, and that forced us into writing imperative methods to create and manage the UI elements. Also, our application was not centralized, but rather scattered into multiple widgets, instances. And on the top of that, we were using a massive dependency web to load models, which was heavy to load and hard to optimize. I won't dive deep into all these reasons, but I would like to highlight some the most relevant ones, because that will be important to know when we start talking about the some aspects of the modernization of the modern web UI. Okay, this is what I mean by monolithic. This is a single file, so the login screen, yes. This is the one that performs the authentication of the users of the old web UI. This is, of course, a simplification because the code is very extensive. But, and it is supposed to be a view, but this is not behaving as a view because, as you can see here, it's managing heavy, this is not working. It's managing heavy dependencies, its own dependencies. It's manually building the HTML. In this specific method, it's for some buttons. And it's directly managing the business logic and the API call. Because everything is trapped in this single file, you can't reuse the logic. So you can test it properly and you can change the UI without risking the security flow. This is a massive code object that knows too much and handles too many things for being a view, and this is not how a view should behave. Oops, one moment. This is not working. Oops, I jumped too way. Okay, so this is another problem present in the old approach, so how we build the UI elements. Look at the code of the left, because this is using imperative code, meaning that we have to tell the browser how to build the interface step by step. So this, for example, this code here, this is corresponds to the login button from this login screen file that we mentioned before, but we aren't just saying show a button. So we are defining an object in memory. We are defining the properties. We are finding a specific container and we are explicitly placing that into this container. And this is exhausting. It's like going to a restaurant, heading to the kitchen and telling the chef, hey, cut the meat, lit the fire, put the meat, cook it, wait 5 minutes, put it in the bread, serve it. Yeah, That's imperative. So, for example, in a modern framework like React, we just say, I want a hamburger. We define what we want, and the framework handles the kitchen work way easier, right? I mean, okay, so finally we had the problem of the hard dependencies. So this corresponds to the same file, the login screen, and this is the top of the file. So before this file can run, before it can even render a single pixel, it demands a lift of 50 different models. So the constructor, the topic bus, the login screen, the authentication library, etc. So this has so many problems because it's difficult to maintain and test. You have to mock the entire universe and you have to fill out all these requirements in order to make it work. It's monolithic. The browser has to download and analyze all the models before doing anything. And it's fragile if any dependency fails. If, I don't know, you have a network glitch on a file that you don't even need that moment, the entire login page can crash. So it's the difference between saying, I just need a hammer to work, and saying, I cannot start working until you bring me the entire toolbox, the mechanic, and the truck. Because why not? Okay, so we have a heavy dependency chain, we have imperative code, and a monolithic architecture. That's why I mentioned before that we couldn't just tweak the current solution. We needed a fundamental shift in how we build the applications. So that brings us to our solution. Okay, so what are the new things here? First of all, the tech stack. So we are relying on React as the main framework, using Vite because it provides a lot of optimizations for the browser. And for the UI elements, we are relying on Butterfly 6, currently in the latest version. As we are using a modern framework, which is React, the way of declaring the components is made in a declarative way versus the imperative way that we saw before. And apart from the regular states available in React, Redux also provides a global unified state to manage the login state, meaning the application will need to know if the current session is authenticated or not. And for consuming the API commands, we rely on another library called RTK Query. And this allows to have a better separation of concerns between the services and the components. And yeah, since we are using TypeScript, that also ensures some strict type safety. Okay, you can see here how different the architecture or the approach is in comparison with the monolithic view that we saw before. So in terms of the authentication, we have the view, which is managed by these specific components, the app component and the login main page. I will explain the difference of them in a second. I said that we are relying the global state on this file managed by the authentication slide and the multi-factor authentication endpoints, aka the API calls, that will be managed by the RTK query library, and this will be the name of the file. Don't worry if you're not able to remember anything, but I will keep mentioning it and I will remember it for you. Okay, we have the main overview. Let's see how some details about how we fix some issues in comparison with the legacy approach. Okay, this is one of the solutions. On the left, you can see the old Dojo imperative code, and here's the new approach. Notice that we aren't calling construct list anymore. Obvious, we changed to another framework. But what I mean by that is that we are not manually manipulating the DOM anymore. Yay. So we are declaring what we want, the login form. So in this case, the UI is a pure reflection of a state. For example, if the authentication value is true, the login button is disabled and this is handled by React. We don't need to call explicitly or look for the button ID and call disable because React handles this work. So we change this imperative code by a declarative one. And another remarkable change is related to the state management. So in order to tell the other React components if there is an existing session and some data, for example, this one, if the user is logged in, which is a Boolean, the user that has been authenticated and this error, in case there is any. So we are relying on global statuses. And this is tracking the values that I said before. But this is not only helpful to determine if a given session is, or a given user has been authenticated. It is also helpful to manage the routes because there will be protected rules, protected pages in this case. And the very important thing is that we have an initial state with some predefined values. And we are not updating them manually, but we are relying on these reducers, setIsLogin and setIsLogout. I will explain it in a minute with an example. But these specific reducers are calling two different scenarios. When the application initializes, and that will be taken by the app component, and via any user login by any authentication mechanism, and that will be shown by the login main page component. So I'm not sure if you are more or less familiarized with React, but it follows this hierarchy way of defining the components. So a component can have a parent and multiple children. But the parent of all of them, it's the app component, meaning that this is the component, the first component that renders and initializes when any React application begins. So that's why this is important, because when the modern web UI starts and initializes, we need to know if there is an existing session. So this operation needs to be done. We need to know if there is an existing session. And also the way we consume API call have changed. So the API logic is set in what we call the communication layer, aka the service. And this is where the hooks, the endpoints of all the authentication methods are defined. In this example, I only put the user and password login. So we defined here the URL and some parameters here. I'm not sure if you can see it in the bottom of the hub, but the anyway, so you define this endpoint here. I haven't added it in the code, but you can export it here. And from any other component, you can export it. And in this case, this is being used in the login button event clicker. So you call it here, you provide some payload, and you handle the response. And after considering that there is no error, you can call this function that we saw before, the global state. And of course, then I will show it in a minute, because if not, I will repeat so much. Okay, how is this working, the important part? So I have mentioned in one of the previous slides that the global state modifies, it's updated in two scenarios, when the application initializes and when the user wants to log in. And I would like to describe the first case, and if we have some time, I will explain the other one. Otherwise, it will be in the slides anyway. So at the very beginning, when the modern web UI loads, it performs an initial handshake. That means that there is a batch of API calls that are a call, so, and it gets like some information about the configuration, the environment, and this is the same as it happens in the old web UI. But the value that are interesting is the who am I, because if there is an existing session, you will see which UID, which user has been authenticated. So if there is a valid session, we will call the setIsLogin function. Otherwise, we will call the setIsLogout. If there, depending if there is some session, some routes will be unblocked or not. So if there is, and this is performed by this Boolean, if this is true, there is authentication, so the protected pages are shown. Otherwise, it will redirect to the login page, or you can have some access to non-protected pages. Okay, this is basically the same thing that I just explained, but more details. I will skip this slide, and I will explain, I'm not sure if I have some time, I will need to speed up. So this is the same thing, but this is the other approach. So what happens if a user is authenticated? How is this managed? So the process is quite similar, but the main difference is that the user needs to introduce the user and password. This is only the example for user and password, but it works similarly in other authentication methods. So once the user enters the credentials and clicks login, the component that is performing the work is the login main page component. And it's calling a different hook, which is the one that logs in and gets the user and password. And the rest is the same. If you get a success, the Redux store and the status will be changed and the page will be reloaded and you will be able to see the main page, which is the active users page. Okay, this is a demo, but I'm not sure if I will have to show it, so feel free to check it in the slides. They are already available. And, oops, I'm not sure. Okay, let's get to the conclusion super quick. So we changed from an imperative way of constructing the elements, the UI elements, into a declarative way. Also, the global states, which in the legacy code were distributed in widgets, now we rely on Redux to manage them. And the backend, while it was mixed in the view, now it's encapsulated in the hooks using the RTK query library. The safety, well, from JavaScript to TypeScript, from implicit to strict. And I put here some examples of the bundler that were using one approach and the other, and how the integration test libraries are using each of them. And this is the last slide, I think. So one thing that we want to improve in the future is that we would like to optimize the code in terms of good separation of concerns, because when we were adapting this legacy code, we took some design choices to simplify the migration process, and that included adopting some anti-patterns that, even though they are not so super critical, the code could be written in a more readable or structured way, so this will be one goal. Another goal will be providing the passwordless authentication method to login into FreeIPA, most likely using OAuth2. Since we are currently working on optimizing the integration test of the modern web UI to run them faster, we will adapt also the login and the authentication method, the test for them. And of course, we would like to add some internationalization, so the login page will be affected by that. I put here some resources and the FOSDEM talk. In case you want to locally test the solution and try the other authentication methods, I added here some design docs that are adapted to the main, to the modern web UI. And that's all from my side. Any questions?
From anyone?
How were the granola bars?
Then a question for you.
Okay. If there is no question, thank you everyone for coming.